Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC newsroom in New York. The situation is extremely explosive in Jerusalem this morning, and at this moment, an NBC correspondent is standing by the microphone there to bring us an up-to-the-minute account of what's occurring, an account we will hear early in the program. The French government is taking all the action against the communist strikers that is within its power. Now, for a moment, your announcer.
Be sure to live to enjoy the holidays. Drive carefully. Winter driving means more hazards, more accidents, and more deaths for drivers and pedestrians. In many states, the traffic accident death rate goes up 50% in the winter months. Don't kid yourself with the idea that accidents always happen to the other fellow. They can happen to you if you're not careful at all times. Don't speed, don't drink. Be careful of road and weather conditions, and make sure that your car is in a safe condition for winter driving. Do a winter check of brakes, tires, tire chains, windshield wipers, heaters, and defrosters. Be on your guard against winter accidents. They can happen to you this very morning. Remember, it can happen to you. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
About 5,000 shouting Arabs headed for the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem early this morning, shouting resentment toward the United Nations and sporadically firing the weapons they carry. Let's see if we can't get the latest word by way of a direct report from John Donovan in Jerusalem. Come in, John Donovan in Jerusalem. Ladies and gentlemen, we're very sorry that we can't get Mr. Donovan this morning. We cannot contact him at the moment. Here, then, is a summary of what we understand is taking place up to this moment in the Holy Land. Violence has erupted on a broad scale as thousands of Arabs stormed through the streets of Jerusalem. They vented their anger at the impending division of Palestine by burning a number of shops, by turning over the automobiles they encountered, by stoning the buses, and loosing bursts of gunfire. There have been a number of casualties. There is no accurate report whatever as to the extent. They include both Jews and Arabs. We do know that. British troops and the police of Palestine are racing to the trouble areas in both armored cars and in trucks. They've thrown up barricades in an effort to halt the mobs. Haganah, the underground, of course, the Jewish Defense Army, as it calls itself, has turned out to protect Jewish lives and property. Police are making estimates. They're estimating that as many as 5,000 Arabs came out of the old city of Jerusalem and headed for the Jewish quarter. That would, of course, be Zion Square. A roadblock manned by police with Tommy guns turned this mob back, but the rioters swept on and did a considerable amount of damage, although in a flurry of gunfire, no casualties were reported. At least six shops have been set afire. Two automobiles belonging to Jewish merchants were burned. And the armored cars of the police edged into this particular mob of some 5,000 Arabs, firing Bren guns, and the patrols began fighting at once. One group of Arabs, crying out against the United Nations, hurled stones at an automobile in which an Associated Press correspondent was riding, but did not, as he reports for us, connect with their target. As the foregoing occurs in Jerusalem, demonstrations have also broken out anew in Cairo and in Damascus as the crowds display their resentment toward partition. In another trouble spot, Paris, action may be taken very shortly on the anti-strike law asked by Premier Schuman. The National Assembly starts its session in less than an hour. In Italy, the government has averted the threatened nationwide strike of city employees by granting the wage increases they demanded. The tenseness has eased in Italy to a considerable extent, but still circulating are those reports that the communist labor organizations intend to call a general strike to coincide with similar action in France. The U.S. Air Force in Germany thinks the C-47 plane missing since Friday with 20 persons aboard has been located. A radio message received by the pilot of a search plane said, "Am in rough area with trees." Another signal indicated the plane was down in the French occupation zone, and 40 or 50 radio-equipped jeeps had once fanned out and are combing the area. Ambulances are also ready to move in the moment the exact location is determined. This is the plane which disappeared while on a flight from Pisa, Italy, to Frankfurt. At the same time, in another part of the world, Japan, An Army patrol has found the wreckage of the C-47 Air Transport Command plane missing since Sunday. It was located on Mount Fuji. The pilot and the co-pilot, the only persons aboard, were both killed. No names have been announced. This morning, other nations are yet to be heard from regarding the United States announcement of yesterday that it was building extensive installations for the testing of atomic energy on the Pacific atoll of Eniwetok. The Dutch-Indonesian conflict out in the Indies, about which we have heard little of late, is in the news again today. A U.S. transport, the Renville, has arrived at Batavia Harbor in Java, where it will serve as the scene of negotiations aimed at settling the controversy. Delegates representing the Dutch, the Indonesians, and the United Nations Good Offices Committee will get together. At another meeting, the Big Four foreign ministers convene again at their London conference table, where they are making no noticeable progress. Here at home, the prices of meat, butter, and shortening took another climb. The president of the Investment Bankers Association of America, Edward Hopkinson, thinks American aid to Europe should be administered by a bipartisan corporation composed of the best available men from both political parties who would give the task their full time. He thinks such a corporation should also handle the procurements of supplies, relief materials, and should buy them in the United States. He outlined that plan at the Investment Bankers Convention in Hollywood, Florida. And now let's have some more direct reports. Let's span the Atlantic, switch to the scene of the trouble in France for a direct report by Paul Archinard in Paris.
There's been a somewhat melodramatic early morning in the National Assembly. Throughout the night, the communist deputies occupied the session hall. Until the early hours of morning, the nibbled sandwiches, took cap naps from the wide-padded benches of the House, and waited. Waited for the gendarmes to come and expel one of their members, who had last night called on the Army to refuse to operate against strikers. Shortly before 6 o'clock, an officer leading 50 Republican guards entered the hall. None of the men bore arms. Three times the officer invited the deputy to come down from his perch in the speaker stand, and three times the deputy demurred. Two guards were then sent to bring him down, and he made no trouble, following the soldiers out of the hall with all the communist deputies trailing behind singing the Marseillaise. During the night, the police expelled strikers from the electric light plants of Paris, and with power returned, the subway is working normally again today. Food reached Paris in good quantities during the night, but gas pressure is reaching the danger point, and there is fear of sabotage. Many trains are running in spite of sabotage, which is beginning to anger public opinion, for people are getting hurt. A vote for or against the strike in the Renault Auto Works was stopped by the Minister of Labor yesterday afternoon to avoid trouble, for outside pressure is applied on workers. Strikers in an occupied Paris telephone center were arrested, 103 of them, and only 11 out of the whole lot were telephone employees. It's just been announced that an American transport plane has been sighted down in the wooded hills of Moselle this morning near the town of Beach. This is Paul Archinard in Paris.
Now to hear what's doing in England from an NBC correspondent on the spot from Merrill Muller in London.
The Council of Foreign Ministers this afternoon is expected to turn sharply from its drifting course and get down to the debate of essentials, according to an authoritative Anglo-American source in London today. The issue expected to develop today is that of the Austrian peace treaty. Late last night, it was learned that the Austrian deputies were ready to bring forth the results of their work, for which they had yesterday asked more time. The results, I am told by an American delegate, is failure. Failure to agree on the French compromise on the distribution of German assets in Austria. The one point blocking successful completion of the Austrian treaty. The Russians are maintaining their position of demanding excessive properties as German assets and extraterritorial rights. Anglo-American authorities at Lancaster House have told me that if Mr. Marshall now asks the conference to devote itself to the Austrian treaty, as he is expected to do after his luncheon meeting with Mr. Bevan today, then Molotov, now supported by Vyshinsky, who arrived this morning, is believed ready to block further action with long tirades against the Western powers. Among the delegations, it is now the consensus that unless the Russians come forward quickly with a compromise, this session, as a propaganda sounding board, can only last another 10 days before they run out of an agenda. However, such compromises may be in the offing, for it has just been announced that Mr. Marshall has accepted a Molotov invitation to luncheon on Friday and is taking with him three other diplomatic experts, Ambassadors Bedell Smith and Douglas and Councillor Boland. This is Merrill Muller in London.
There are several items of particular interest in the news from our own capital. Here they are, wrapped up by Leif Eade in Washington.
This morning there's a great milling around here about what to do about those high prices. The trouble seems to be that every time somebody looks hard at the problem, his glasses get all fogged up with 1948 politics. Senator Wherry, the Republican whip, this morning calls on President Truman to spell out exactly how he wants to carry out that 10-point cut prices plan if he's not just talking for political purposes. Many Washington observers think there was a good measure of 1948 politics in the president's call for price control. And Senator Taft, now himself a 1948 candidate, wonders whether the administration doesn't really want to see things go on as they are, so there won't be any falling off in the boom so favorable, as he says, to anyone in power. And Taft comes up with his own 8-point plan to satisfy critics in the Republican Party, who've been saying that you can't win elections just by shooting at the president's price control and rationing suggestions. Boiled down, the Taft plan amounts to work harder, eat less, cut down on credit, including FHA housing loans, limit foreign help to countries where we know it'll do some good, and cut taxes. Senator Flanders, a leader among the Republican snipers at Taft, says it's not a bad list, but he still can't see how cutting taxes, a basic Republican Party plank, would stop inflation. Flanders, who also wants rationing of scarce things like meat, says he's for tax relief for lower-income families. Otherwise, in Washington this morning, the CIO Executive Council meets here to take a stand on the Truman anti-inflation plan. And this morning, a House investigating committee starts looking into the wartime books of the RFC. This is Leif Eade in Washington.
The commander of ground forces in Japan, General Robert Eichelberger, says that Japan is a reservoir of friendship for the United States because of MacArthur's policy and cooperative efforts between American forces and the Japanese. And, says the general, this reservoir of friendship in Japan might in future years be sufficiently strong to deter any enemy who considered striking at the United States, presumably from that part of the world. In the United States, martial law still exists in Maricopa County of Arizona, where CIO vegetable workers are on strike. The growers and shippers of the Salt River Valley have now refused to negotiate further until the union officials have signed the Taft-Hartley non-communist affidavits. Over the nation, the Midwestern cold snap is moderating, and the milder weather is heading for the Northeast. One of the quickest changes, Rochester, Minnesota, from 17 below to 27 above. Now, your announcer.
President Harry S. Truman, ex-President Herbert Hoover, and General Dwight D. Eisenhower are among the leading American citizens who endorse CARE for European Relief. CARE is a nonprofit organization through which individual Americans and American groups can send food packages overseas. CARE can send 50,000 packages each day if you and your friends and neighbors will send in your contributions. 10,000 packages are going right now. 5 times as many as can be sent. Orders placed in the United States are airmailed to CARE warehouses overseas, and deliveries are made directly from the warehouses. Signed receipts obtained upon delivery are mailed back to you, frequently accompanied by touching letters of gratitude. You can help by sending $10 to CARE, C-A-R-E, New York City. Your $10 contribution will send over 21 pounds of food into Europe, or you may send $4 to CARE and ensure the delivery of a special package containing 10 pounds of lard. CARE, New York City. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
H.L. Mencken and artist Thomas Hart Benton, neither of whom has ever been accused of being publicity shy, are engaged in a minor controversy over an early painting by the noted artist. Mencken has offered to give an early Benton work to a Baltimore museum if the museum will evaluate it so he can claim income tax deduction. Before the institution could act, artist Benton was heard all the way from Missouri, saying Mencken probably paid about $15 for the work originally and that about a 50-cent deduction would be right. He also went on to suggest some rich person buy a new and expensive Benton painting to present to the museum. For the moment, the highly articulate Mr. Mencken of Baltimore seems to be silenced by the equally voluble painter from Missouri. That's the story, folks. John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.